The LGBTQ plus community feels it's under attack. Lawmakers have certainly focused their time on gay issues. We look back at one interview we did earlier this year as we take a look at the year that was, 2025, on the cities. Today's program brings back an interview we conducted in February centered on issues involving transgender citizens that were front and center as the Trump administration first took office. The administration quickly turned back diversity, equity, and inclusion programs known as DEI, banned transgender troops in the military, removed what the administration calls gender ideology from government websites, and defunded gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth. On February 21st, we were joined by Reverend Rich Hendricks, pastor of Metropolitan Community Church, and Tyler Mitchell with the Project of the Quad Cities, which counsels LGBTQ youth, adults, and families. What have you been hearing? Let's start with you, Reverend Hendricks. What have you been hearing in the community in regards to the executive orders or even the inaugural address where he says there's two genders? When you heard that, what did that do for you?
Well, first of all, it's a myth that there are two genders. Gender is a wonderful spectrum, just like the rest of the world. The world is not black and white, and the world is not male nor female. There is a wonderful spectrum, and so I want to make sure and get that in there. But as far as, you know, hearing the craziness that's going on, I feel like we have a person who has seized power from the federal government and is acting as a bully and a dictator, and I think he needs to be called out for it.
Is there a certain level of fear that you've heard? And out of curiosity, do you hear a different message from young people as opposed to older people in the LGBTQ community? I mean, are the young people angry? Because they were so used to seeing their rights improve over the years. I just wonder if there's a difference that you're noticing as far as generations.
I'm seeing a lot of fear and anger, regardless of age, and somewhat despair more from the older folks, just because they felt, you know, we've fought these fights, we've been through this before, we didn't think we would have to do this again, and so they've got to kind of retool and reimagine and get back in the game.
Tyler, you're nodding your head to that as well. I mean, what have you heard from clients and from people that go to the project?
For sure. I think Rich's point of, you know, regardless of age, people are just feeling very fearful and concerned in this particular moment, you know, and I think it's all across the larger LGBTQ plus community. This feels unprecedented in so many different ways, and so I think, again, we're still trying to get our bearings so that we can kind of appropriately respond and, you know, focus internally, I think, on supporting each other as a community, which is so important right now.
And tell me how that's, you got to pivot right now.
Sure.
I mean, everyone is pivoting right now.
Yeah.
So how are you pivoting right now, I guess?
Yeah, I think, you know, information is so important right now, right? Trying to stay updated on what's going on. Sometimes it's a precarious balance, of course, between your mental health, right, and being informed. But for me, for example, I feel the need to be informed right now so that I can go to work each day and help my organization best respond to different changes in public policy and, frankly, the information that we have in the moment. It's the best that we can do.
Well, right now, I mean, the two areas that are really being focused on is DEI, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Programs. And the second is transgendering, particularly transgender youth. And Reverend, I mean, you know, Iowa has already done regulations in regards to transgender. Are there that many transgender people in the Quad Cities, and I mean, is this a major issue?
It's never been an issue or a problem. And the number of transgender persons is quite small. which makes them a relatively easy target. And I wanted to say something about the DEI. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is everyone. But people don't realize how much it also impacts the disabled, the differently abled community. So there's going to be a lot of nasty effects that come from taking away protections and helping people understand diversity, education, and inclusion.
There's people that are going to argue that the DEI policies just went too far. Or the aid for transgender youth, particularly in schools, just went too far for parents. Is that what you see? Because, I mean, politically, there's pendulums that occur. You know, our society, America, becomes very liberal and very conservative.
It's. I think there's truth and facts, and that is, human beings are worthy of respect and dignity, and that doesn't depend on a pendulum. And I think our schools and teachers were really beginning to understand that everywhere. I mean, not everywhere, but most places. And now, you know, transgender persons in particular, you know, fear for their safety, even in their schools where they ought to be protected. But those protections are being removed. And so it leaves them very vulnerable. It takes a brave person to be transgender.
Tyler, talk about the vulnerability. I mean, people may not really realize, and I think a lot of people do, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just in general, we know that our trans folks are more likely to experience homelessness, for example, right? Often a result of families who might not be accepting of their gender identity. And just think about that. When one is removed from their home, all sorts of other things suddenly become irrelevant, right? Whether it's taking one's medications or eating a healthy meal, right? There are so many things that suddenly become different priorities of just surviving that it's very difficult to maintain your mental health in those circumstances. And so that's why we're so focused, at least at the project, right, on through our behavioral health services or through our support groups in helping folks understand what, you know, gender identity is and how family members can have conversations with one another to be supportive. Again, I think now more than ever, we talk about community supporting one another, you know, in family situations in which it's safe, we need that familial support as well.
Tell me about that counseling that is offered. I mean,
for sure.
Because you're not only dealing with the person who is going through a persecution or discrimination. You've also got the family that has to better understand the person.
Yeah, and you know, specifically with the types of services that we provide and with families, most often when someone is in the family that's LGBTQ, right, the first step is just a willingness to be able to show up and kind of sit in the space and listen, right? It seems pretty fundamental that the ability to listen to one another, you know, is so important, but it truly is, right? And so we have very intentional conversations with our clients around how, you know, they can reduce their own anxiety, whether that's through mindfulness or harm reduction, right? We want folks to be able to feel and live as their best selves, and I think that increases our ability to connect with each other, too.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
But sounds so difficult to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, behavioral health work or mental health work, improving oneself is typically not easy work, right? It requires you to be vulnerable and to be willing to discuss things that you might be uncomfortable with, but we also see, right, particularly in conversations around LGBTQ topics and even more so around folks who are transgender, there's so much misconception and misunderstanding amongst folks. And if we were better about having conversations and maybe also taking a moment to do just a bit of our own research, I think we could be much more kind and intentional in how we're communicating with each other.
And that's what where the church comes in as well. I mean, that's the resource that you try to provide. Some people have left the church. Some people feel that the church has left them. That's really your role as well, is it not?
Correct. Helping people to understand the world from the perspective of love, because that's what's key. You know, I often tell people, you know, from my perspective, it's love God. You know, however you conceive your God to be, love God, love one another, and everything else is window dressing. We are, with One Human Family, organizing peaceful, nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience training. And I think that's going to be very important, because I think we're called upon to not cooperate with evil. And what we have in power right now is an evil system that seeks to target the most vulnerable persons in our society. And our love, my faith, calls me to reach out and try to help and protect those who are on the margins. And we can do that individually and personally through wonderful organizations like The Project, but we can also do that by resisting oppressive regimes like the one that we're currently under.
You use strong language like evil and regime.
Absolutely.
But these are people that got a mandate of votes. They've got the majority votes in America, or as far as Iowa is concerned, it's a very Republican, where it was usually, if we're doing the colors, it's now more of a red state than it was a purple state. Don't you think that people have spoken, though?
No. We did not vote in a person to take over the federal government and reimagine the Constitution. This is a dictator who has openly and willingly put forth anti-constitutional, I mean blatantly unconstitutional efforts. You know, his attempt to silence free speech and free thought amongst federal employees is very scary, in the ways that non-elected people like Elon Musk have seized control of the government. That's a scary, scary thing. And when you get somebody, you know, I have a friend who works for the Social Security Administration and was talking about the memos that they received about the DEI stuff, for example. You know, part of that memo says, and you are required to report your coworkers if you suspect that they have DEI material displayed. Wow. This is the United States of America? That's not what we voted for. And it's dangerous.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the project. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you get federal money, so you got to be very careful what you're saying. I understand that.
Sure.
But tell me about your clientele since the inauguration or since the election. Is there that fear? I mean, what are you hearing from people?
Yeah, I think that there is definitely a fear across many communities. You know, we've talked a lot about the LGBTQ plus community and the trans community, but to Rich's point, you know, he mentioned people who are in the disabled community, right? This is more than a LGBTQ issue or a transgender issue, right? The project, we have been in this work since 1986. We started serving people who were being impacted by the HIV virus at the time, people literally losing their lives. And so the folks that come through our doors, they're people living with HIV, they're trans people, they're LGBTQ people, but it's not all who we serve. And we're hearing from, again, multiple communities, just a sense of fear. I think the unknown of what could happen is still very much top of mind for a lot of people. And I think, too, as the administration, again, focuses particularly on DEI efforts, you know, I think to Rich's point, it's perhaps not what voters were looking for, right? They're looking for lowering costs and a variety of other issues that are unrelated to the types of trainings that offices are holding.
When we talk about fear, is it more of a fear that people are worried that they're going to lose some of their rights, or is it a fear of actually physical fear?
I think it's a combination of things, Jim, and I think it greatly depends upon where you find yourself in life, right? I think if, again, I use an example of a trans youth, right? If you're a trans youth and your parents have kicked you out of your home and you're couch surfing or trying to find ways to find shelter. I think the threat that you're facing is far different than, you know, I'll use myself as an example. I'm a cisgender gay white dude, right? Where I think the risk level is different for me. I'm not saying it is non-existent, but different parts of our community are going to be impacted in different ways and in different levels of severity.
Let's talk about some of the rights that already exist. I think of marriage first off. And let's be honest, Iowa was a trailblazer as far as same-sex marriage. And now there's talk about reverting back and changing that. You've been part when you could claim victory. And now you're seeing some of those victories ebbing away. Is that a big concern in Iowa?
It is a huge concern, not just in Iowa, but nationally. Our dictator's attack on rights includes all LGBTQ persons. He has rolled back rights for the gay community. And I have no doubt that their goal, they've said as much, their goal includes reversing marriage equality, and they're going to do that every bit as much as they manage to get women's reproductive rights reversed. So, yeah, it is a major problem, and I think it's calls for people to stand up in this time. One of the things One Human Family is doing is we're organizing a pro-democracy rally. And well, we're looking at that for Thursday, the 27th of February, and the place is yet to be decided. But there's lots of opportunities, ways for people to not cooperate with evil. And I'm sorry, I just think it is evil. Everything that they are doing is done the way a bully would do it. You know, if you really believe in these values that the Trump administration claims to promote, why not implement them the right way? In other words, they have a majority in Congress, but he is running them instead of working with them. That's not the way our constitutional democracy was set up to operate.
You have these protest plans, but do they really work? I mean, does it really, are you not just preaching to the converted?
It's important that people understand they still have a voice. And I believe every voice matters. The same type of questions were put to Dr. Martin Luther King back in the 60s when they, when it looked hopeless for them to do such things as sit-ins or protest rallies. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of sentiment out there where people are looking for an outlet to help express their frustration and rage. And it's only going to get worse because with the tariffs, people are no longer going to be able to afford some of the basics. So I hope that the tide will turn because of the overreach of this administration.
I really want to make sure that I touch also upon LGBTQ health.
For sure.
And AIDS and the HIV epidemic, you and I lived through that period of time. We know how devastating it was. And we also know that there's a whole new generation that doesn't necessarily remember those days. Explain to me right now the fight against HIV, making sure your health is good, and just not looking the other way.
Of course, yeah. We have made astounding progress in our fight against the HIV virus. There was a time, in fact, that in this country, HIV was the number one cause of death for young Americans. And to your point, Jim, there are a lot of people who are around today and participating in our society that weren't around in those days. And so it is a reminder of the amazing progress that a community can make when it comes together to organize and fight against systems that are holding it back, right? If it weren't for HIV advocacy from the people who were impacted by the virus, we would not have the medical treatments that we have today that allow a person living with the virus to live a long and fulfilling life, just like all of us at this table, right? That is an an incredible achievement of science. And we still have people who are getting the virus today, right? HIV transmissions have not gone away. Again, the progress that we have made, particularly because of interventions like PrEP and also prevention work out in the community, are truly astounding. And we need to really take note of that progress, because when we're having conversations, particularly at the federal level, about budgets and where things are being cut and what programs to keep, right? These programs have been essential to that progress and deserve that continued support.
Because HIV, it used to be a death sentence.
Of course, yep,
you know,
correct.
And what are you telling people now? I mean, since it's not a death sentence, I think some people don't necessarily take it as seriously.
Sure, yeah, I can understand that. And I think what I would say is, of course, because of medical advancements, it's not a death sentence. People living with the virus are still predisposed to a number of different health inequities or gaps, right? More likely, again, to experience homelessness or even substance abuse, right? There are a variety of different sort of gaps or openings that organizations like The Project help to fill, so that, again, if a person is not experiencing homelessness, then they're far more focused on taking their medication every day and staying healthy, right?
Marginalized people also often internalize. They hide from a problem as opposed to seeking help.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you want to point out there's always help out there. People may be desperate. How do they contact you? I mean, how do they progress into a better life?
Sure. And that's a really good point, Jim, in the sense of there are a lot of people who are frankly just afraid to come in our doors, right? Because of what that action or that acknowledgement means. And so that's why it's so important that we have the ability to be able to go to people out in the community and provide those services and support, right? But we want folks who might be impacted by HIV, LGBTQ people, folks across our community who need access to sexual health services, behavioral health, and support, to know that our doors are still open. We've been here since 1986, and we have no intention of going anywhere.
Counseling is so important, reaching out is so important, you're not alone.
It is, exactly. And we hope that those services will continue to be funded, because that's the issue right now, is they're stopping funding for all of the things that are so important that Tyler mentioned.
And counseling and one-on-one and talking out and reaching out and knowing that you're not alone is so crucial. I mean, you've lived a good long life like I have. You have seen so many different waves of the way people react. What's your optimism right now?
I guess my optimism is human beings are incredibly adaptive. And so I, you know, encourage people to adapt, to continue to change and grow and seek community, because that's where we find home, is in communities, in connecting. You know, with me of my faith, it's connecting with God, but it's also connecting with one another and with creation. And when we do that, and we can do that regardless of what oppressive regime we may be under, we become stronger together, and we become stronger personally.
Our thanks to Reverend Rich Hendricks with the Metropolitan Community Church and Tyler Mitchell, who's with the Project of the Quad Cities, for that interview we featured in February. The days are counting down to Christmas and the New Year, so here's some of the events you might be interested in attending during the holidays, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Finish your gift wrapping while enjoying festive cocktails and holiday movies. Then, listen to live music while sipping on yummy cocktails at the Figge Art Museum. Next, get ready for a Polar Express pajama party. Enjoy fun activities like crafts and face painting. Keep the Polar Express fun going at the Drive-In Theater. Enjoy the movie on the big screen and make sure to grab some hot chocolate. Finally, bring your dog to Oak Grove Tavern so they can get their very own photo with Santa. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Rebecca Kayson and Alan Morrison are a true team. Rebecca plays the ukulele, she sings and writes original songs, and Alan accompanies her on the U-bass, acoustic guitar, and harmonizes.
They joined us at the Black Box Theater to play one of their originals every day of the year. Rebecca Kasid and Alan Morrison with Every Day of the Year. Our thanks to them and our thanks to you as we look back at the year 2025 with some of the interviews we featured on this program. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.